by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to be playing a 26-minute clip of an interview that Charlotte Littlefield Brown and I had with Ted Gunnarsson up in Addison, Texas, a number of years ago. And he spoke quite insightfully about his problems, you know, that he had in investigations. He investigated not only some satanic stuff, but also some pedophilia cases. But so here we go with that interview with Ted Gunnarsson. And then I'm going to play a clip, not the whole hour, of the D.C. Madam, which had to do with similar issues. So here we go with his first 26 minutes of Ted Gunnarsson, George Butler, and Charlotte Littlefield Brown. Here we go now.
Welcome back to the World Review Commentary. I'm your host, George Butler, along with
Charlotte Littlefield Brown.
We just got back from Philadelphia a week ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a fabulous whirlwind trip. We got to see Ground Zero, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C. is outstanding.
We have another guest coming up soon here, and we're going to get him set up with a microphone and everything. His name is Ted Gunnarsson. Welcome to our program, Ted.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a real pleasure. I'm glad you invited me to your show. It's been a long time since I've been on a radio show. I've been incognito. I've been in hiding.
Okay. Ted, tell us how you got started in this movement of spreading the truth and how you're really concerned about this country. Is that not right?
Oh, are you kidding? I'm very sick about our country. I was in the FBI for some 28 years. And, right here?
Yeah, talk close.
Talk close, okay. And I retired in 1979. At that time, I was in charge of most of Southern California. I had over 700 personnel under my command, a $22.5 million budget, 16 offices, and so on and so forth. Very responsible job. Actually, it was a 24-7 job, 7 days a week, morning to night. And at the time of my retirement, it was mandatory. You had to retire at 55. I was 50. So I said, well, rather than wait 5 more years, I'll just get out now. And it's a good thing I did, because my first major investigation as a private professional investigator was the Dr. Jeffrey R. McDonald case. That's spelled capital M-A-C-D-O-N-A-L-D. And Dr. McDonald was a former Green Beret captain, doctor, who was tried and convicted of the murder of his wife and 2 children, 2.5 and 5.5. And sentenced to 3 consecutive life sentences. Some of his friends came to me and said, he's innocent. Will you investigate it? This is privately now, okay? The investigation initially was handled by the Army, U.S. Army, CID. And once I entered the case, within 10 months, I obtained a signed confession from a girl named Helena Stokely, who said that Dr. McDonald did not commit those murders. They were committed by her satanic cult group, okay? And so I'm saying to myself, a satanic cult. So let's see, I heard about Satan in the Bible. Let's find out what this is all about. I went public with the information, national TV, radio, and so forth, and with the fact that I had a signed confession, because this is a highly publicized case. And people just came from all parts of the United States, started talking to me about satanic cults. And I was like a sponge, like a magnet. And that's how I got developed. That's how I first got started. And I'm saying, what's going on here? This is going on across the country. Somebody from California and somebody from the East Coast, tells me the same basic story about satanic culture. There must be something to it. Now, the reason that they went after the McDonald family, the cult went after the McDonald family, is because he was moonlighting in a civilian hospital in his spare time, and the GIs would go over there when they would overdose on drugs, and somebody over there was turning them in. They were being given dishonorable discharges. And the cult, the reason for the cover-up, the reason that the officials did not go and fully identify the individuals involved, the satanic cult group, was because they were distributing drugs that were coming in plastic bags in the body cavities of the dead GIs from Southeast Asia into the military base there. And Helena told me there were generals involved, plural that is, enlisted personnel. There were police officers in Fayetteville involved. There were two attorneys in Fayetteville and so forth. There was a big, huge operation.
Was MENA, Arkansas broached in some of these discussions about being a center of, or was that out of Central America? I thought the MENA was a Central American connection, maybe not the Southeast Asia connection.
Yeah, that's right. MENA was basically Central America. The Southeast Asian drugs were coming in not only to the military base there at Bragg, but all over the United States. And as a matter of fact, for documentation, there was an article in Time Magazine, January 1, 1973, documents this. As soon as Helena told me about this, I went down, this was October 1980, I went to the library at UCLA, and I wanted documentation, and I found this one article. You would think, with an operation this big, that you'd find extensive information about it, wouldn't you, right? In all my research at UCLA Library, I spent hours down there, I found one little article in Time Magazine. So you see, the mainstream control media does make a mistake once in a while.
Yes, they do.
I'm sure they didn't want that article in there.
You know, Ted, we're the alternative media right here. With the world, We the People Radio Network, and we broadcast for another one, Genesis Communication Network, and we have to get the word out. There's no other one to do this. The mainline media is owned, you know, lock, stock, and barrel by the big money, the big interest, and so they're not going to always put out the truth.
No, of course, and I have documentation on that. I have a copy of the February 9, 1917 congressional record. That documents Congressman Calloway from Texas was on the floor, and he announced that the J.P. Morgan interests had bought up 25 of America's leading newspapers and inserted their own editor in order to control the press. This was in March of 1915, okay?
Oh, my gosh. They got an early start, didn't they, in this system?
Yeah.
It's been a systematic system of consolidation of interest of media and banking interest and other trade interests also.
So I have this documentation. And you see, in order to discredit me, I'm not some guy pushing a grocery basket looking for a recycling center, right?
No. You're a very reputable person.
I have a reputation.
Yes, right? You have a good one.
Now, in order to discredit me, they have the government. You see what there is? There's a covert and overt operation in our government. Now, when I was in the FBI, I was the overt part of the FBI. You know, the tie, the suit, go to a bank robbery, interview the witnesses, what did the robbers look like, et cetera, et cetera. There's a covert operation in the government that involves the Department of Defense, military intelligence, CIA, NSA, and I'm sure the FBI also, because I know of one situation where an FBI agent was one of a team of five. And he would get an order, and these five agents from different divisions would meet and become involved in their covert, nefarious, criminal activity, whatever it is, whatever the assignment was. I have an interview with Chip Tatum, who was CIA black operative, and he told me...
he did some helicopter flying down in the Central American area, Honduras and so forth. He has quite a story.
Yeah, I've interviewed him. I interviewed him for 26 hours on my radio show when I had it.
Oh, my gosh. That was in-depth then.
In-depth, 26 hours. And I also have a DVD of him. By the way, I give away DVDs. I give DVDs away free. I have over 400 I'm giving away. All you have to do is pay shipping and handling. And I'm doing it right here at this conference.
Do you have a website what that website is, Ted?
Well, I have two websites, tedgunderson.com.
Ted Gunderson, G-U-N-D-E-R-S-O-N.
.com.
.com.
And 1-free-dvd.com. 1-, that's number 1-, free-dvd.com.
Okay. Well, y'all tune in. Go to those websites and look at that information. And Ted's offering this up at an awful good price. And it's invaluable.
It's shipping.
Yeah, it's way worth more than that.
I got 400 of them. I'm giving them away. I give them away. Okay, and believe me, I could use the money because I'm living on my retirement.
Have you seen these dark or these covert activities, whether they're FBI or whatever, grown larger and worse over the last few decades? Have you seen their operations grow in magnitude? But I mean, it's hard to get a firsthand, feedback there. But you can tell from the outside the way the country's headed.
Well, I don't know if it's grown or not, but I think it's become more. We've become more aware of it.
Yes.
And so it's getting out to the public more. And one of the individuals who was really a hero, there have been a number of American heroes in this movement,
sure,
was Gary Webb. He exposed a CIA drug operation that's coming into South Central Los Angeles.
And yes, San Jose Mercury, I believe.
Yeah, San Jose Mercury News.
Yeah, he wrote about the crack epidemic in L.A., I believe, that he alleges in his articles and proves it that the CIA created some of these dealers there of crack, actually, itself.
Oh, absolutely. Now, that was probably the first expose of the drug operation. Although, I have to say mine was probably the first, but I didn't get as much publicity because I'm not a reporter and I just went on the radio and so forth.
Well, he had that publishing, behind him for a while.
Yeah.
And they discredited him and shuttled him off to the side and then murdered him.
Well, then murdered him, yeah. Now, they said that he was suicide. Well, he was suicide. He shot in the head twice.
Yeah, suicide.
You tell me that you shoot yourself once and then shoot yourself
again. He said there were men stalking him around his condo, I believe, before he's murdered.
Yeah. And my key witness on the McDonald case, Alina Stokely, who gave me the confession on October 25, 1980, 10 months after I entered the case, she was murdered. And she contacted a retired police officer, Prince Beasley, in Fayetteville, who called me and said that Alina said that there were men in suits that were running surveillances on her. And I told Prince, I said, get down there immediately. It's about a five-hour drive from Fayetteville. She was down in South Carolina. And he called the attorney, Brian O'Neill. Brian O'Neill said, don't go down there. So I was really upset about that. He could have saved her life. And she died on the couch. She'd been dead for about 4 days. She was nude from the waist down. And the water faucet in the kitchen was running. Now, people are saying, what does that mean? Well, I can tell you what that means. That's a satanic sign. They leave their signature at the crime scene. The signs are air, water, earth, and wind. There's four of them. And then the combination of those is the fifth. And that's the water sign. Now, I've had anonymous phone calls where there's splashing water, and that's a signal that I'm supposed to be frightened, scared, supposed to run the other direction. It doesn't work. Okay? Not with me, it doesn't.
Right.
So anyway, so Alina was murdered, obviously, and they said that she died of natural causes, slight pneumonia, each lung, and cirrhosis of the liver. But, they're famous for just murdering people. I mean, there's no question about that.
Well, this, I know a number of years ago, there was great publicity about Satanism. And somehow that got shuttled off and watered down. What was that? That was to deflect the public's attention about a real problem of these cults.
There is a serious problem in this country, and it dovetails into the Illuminati.
Yes, yes,
and it dovetails into high level politics. These people have infiltrated virtually every level of society. The courts, the district attorney's offices, excuse me, and the prosecutor's offices, law enforcement, the military. These are the goals of the Illuminati as set forth by Adam Weishaupt and announced on May the 1st, 1776. Infiltrate law enforcement, infiltrate the military, control the press and the media. Corrupt the youth through sex and drugs. There are 25 goals. And by the way, the best book of its kind that's ever been written, I think, on the Illuminati, and it outlines these goals, is a book called Pawns in the Game.
Pawns in the Game.
Which is available through me also. That and Franklin Cover Up, Johnny Can't Come Home. Pawns in the Game. Pawns in the Game and lays out the whole Illuminati program to take over the world.
Yes, and that was German. That came out of Germany, did it not?
Yes, well, Adam
Ingolstadt, University of Ingolstadt, I think.
Right. Well, see, Weisshoff was commissioned by the Rothschild family to come up with this plan. He came up with the 25 plans, and it came out of, actually, I think he was in Germany when he announced it.
Yes, yes.
And then the plans were being relayed by horse. Across the country there, and the horseman was intercepted, and the plans were discovered, and then this
struck by lightning, I believe.
Struck by lightning.
And God reached out. The German officials got those dispatches
to
communicate,
right.
And they exposed it publicly, and there were a couple of books written as a result, I think, of that discovery. And I believe they were fomenting the revolution in France at the time. They were supporting the French Revolution.
That's right. Absolutely right. So we have the Franklin cover-up involved in that. That's, of course, they were taking the children out of orphanages, foster homes and Boys Town, driving them to Sioux City, Iowa.
John DeCamp.
John DeCamp.
Yeah.
Driving them to Sioux City, Iowa, flying them to Washington, D.C. for sex orgies and with congressmen, senators. And that way they can tell them how to vote.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, that one book, Franklin Cover-Up, is one I would highly recommend. I think he's done an update recently in the last year or two.
Yes, I
on the Franklin Cover-Up. Mm-hmm. And the Franklin Cover-Up, the name came from a credit union that had come up short on funds. But Larry King headed up that, not the announcer or the broadcaster, but another Larry King headed that up and was involved with all these higher-up Republican politicians in procuring a lot of children for them. And it was just a disgusting tale. But John DeCamp wrote that and held firm to that story. And I believe John DeCamp.
Oh, are you kidding? I worked the case. I worked with John.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Okay, that's right. That's
right. I confirm that.
So you can confirm that is a solid story and evidence is there.
That's right. Well, see, one of the victims, what happened was there was... the IRS and the FBI came in and raided the Franklin Savings and Loan, which was a
savings and loans, okay.
Which was savings and loan that was set up for to service the minorities. And there were $40 million missing. And there was publicity. There were pictures in the paper. Larry King was president of the savings and loan. His picture was in the paper. And 80 children came forward and said, Mommy, Daddy, that man molested me. Or his group molested me, and that's how the case got started. There were four who came forward, were willing to testify. One of them disappeared. Troy Bonner died in the hospital, recanted later on because he was threatened with prosecution. And Alicia Owens refused to recant, and they tried her and sentenced her to prison in Nebraska for lying to a grand jury because she said she had sex with Bob Wadman, the chief of police. He was one of the subjects. And then Paul Benassi was another one who came forward. He refused to recant. Paul later became a born-again Christian, children and so forth. Anyway, this information is available through me.
Okay, we're going to cut away here again for another break, and then we'll come back with Ted Gunderson for another segment if he has time. So we'll be leaving here in just a few seconds, and we'll be back in just a few minutes. And hang in there with us. We're at the Crown Plaza Hotel in Addison, Texas, at a conference, and we'll be right back. Thank you very much. To World Review Commentary, this is your host, George Butler. I'm sitting here with Ted Gunderson, and boy, we're getting into some very, very exciting and then very dark subjects at times, but we have to talk about this, don't we, Ted?
But we have to make it public. That's the one thing that they do not like. They do not like, they meaning the cults, the enemy, the Illuminati, they do not want exposure. That's the one thing they did not want. And they've operated in secrecy for 200 and some plus years. And the worst thing that can happen to them is for us to expose them.
Yes, so we're sitting here and we're helping do that. This alternative media, We the People Radio Network, is a conduit, a connectivity point, a broadcasting point for truth. And we're trying to expose some of these things that can be on the dark side and very insidious and hard to get to because they act in secrecy. They hide behind secrecy, is that right?
Well, they hide behind secrecy, and the thing about it is, so many of our national leaders are involved in it.
Yes.
And people in power are involved in it. So what they have to do is use their their sources in order to discredit us and eliminate, they try to eliminate the exposure.
Okay, we've got a caller from Florida. Darren from Florida, do you have a question for Ted Gunderson? Okay, we'll get back to that in a second. But anyway, what we have is that we have a very difficult problem in trying to get to the truth, and is hidden through secret societies and mystery school systems, and occultism is the general term, that the hidden truth, or is this what you've run into over the years? Is it's very hard to, you interview people, but they're under a cloud of secrecy or oaths of secrecy.
Well, I mentioned in the first segment of the show about the McDonald case and how when public people came from all walks of life and told me about this, and they many people write to me, and some people don't even put their name down. They say that, in fact, I remember receiving a letter from Southern California, and a woman said she was in the satanic cult, she knows what's going on, and she gave me a list of the leaders in that community, some of the leading businessmen, politicians, judges, and so forth. And so I have this information. As a matter of fact, I have 300 boxes of research in my home in Clatonia, and I have somebody there 24/7, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to protect them. In fact, my research fills up a whole bedroom, floor to ceiling, and I've just gathered this through the years.
You've devoted your life to this.
I've devoted my life since I retired from the FBI.
I see.
And my retirement check goes into this. This exposure, trying to help America. I'm worried sick about our country. We have the greatest country in history, and we have these people trying to destroy it, and they're doing a pretty good job. The goals of the Illuminati, the 25 goals that are listed in Pawns in the Game, again, on my website, is tedgunderson.com and 1-3-dvd.com. Those goals, 25 goals, are about 85% complete today. And this really is of grave concern to me. And the thing that really bothers me is that the average American is not aware of this. And they don't know because they haven't done their research.
Are they drugged up with beer and whiskey and drugs? And I mean, they're so in a sleep and in a delusion almost.
Well,
What is it that they're in a comfort zone too, and they don't want to? They don't want to wake up sometime.
Well, they'd rather have their golf game or rather have their six pack in the football game. As long as it doesn't bother them personally. They don't care. That seems to be the ad. Now, you know, here I am. I'm a retired FBI chief. And I would like to think that some of my fellow colleagues would step forward and work with me. They don't. I've been ostracized. I've been kicked out of the Society of Former Special Agents of the FBI. The FBI has come after me. They planted a girl on me back in the 80s, tried to set me up on a drug deal. That didn't work. She finally came over to my side and told me that they tried to set her up, tried to set me up through her. I had gunmen waiting for me in the early 80s. Through divine intervention, I didn't go to these different locations. And I found out afterwards that men were waiting for me. And most recently now, the FBI had 3 investigations of me in the 1980s, trying to put me in jail. I was one day away from being indicted by a grand jury here in Dallas, Texas, as a matter of fact. And I heard about it. I took, on about a Wednesday or Thursday the week before that, I took 3 polygraph tests. I gave it to my attorney, Doug Mulder, a very prominent attorney here in town and a friend of mine. I used to play golf with him. And I told Doug, I said, give this to the U.S. attorney. The U.S. attorney's name was Bill Alexander. And I said, give it to the foreman of the grand jury, these polygraph results, 3 tests. And I did, and I prevented myself from being indicted. But if I'd been indicted on that Tuesday, which they planned to do, I would have had to spend thousands of dollars defending myself. And they would have probably offered me a plea bargain.
Yeah.
And they would say, plea bargain. Okay, we'll give you a year in jail or 30 years if you go to trial. This happened to a friend of mine, Mike Reconosciuto, by the way.
We got a call from Darren in Florida. What is your question for Ted Gunderson?
Hey, I made it through. I get kicked off.
Yeah, Darren. What is your question?
Ted, I'm a big fan of yours. I watch all of your postings from YouTube. And how can I help you? How can I support you? What is that?
How can you support me? Okay,
yeah, I'll tell you here in a second.
I can handle that. You're breaking up badly. The way you can support me, Darren, is to buy my research. As I said earlier on the show, I'm giving away DVDs for shipping and handling. For example, you can get 10 of my DVDs for shipping and handling to be $17.83. Well, usually people just give me $20 for 10 of them. That's $2 a piece. You can't do any better than that. And then I encourage people, when they do receive my research and my DVDs, to make your own copies. And you can't make your copies any cheaper than I send them to you, by the way. You get my material.
Thank you for your call there, Darren.
And share it with your neighbors.
Yeah, do that. We've got another caller. Sean from Boston, what is your question for Ted Gunnarsson?
Hi, I'm sort of familiar with a lot of these things that are pieces of history that are well marginalized, as the case of when Lincoln had the two battleships come to New York and San Francisco to save the Union, sent by the Tsar, who was also battling the central bankers, which possibly eventually led to the Bolsheviks being supported by the Rothschilds and controlled temporarily until they could execute the whole family 4 years later. And there's so many little pieces of history that are neglected on purpose. Like, I never knew that Napoleon trashed the Spanish Inquisition and stole the Vatican records. I mean, none of this is ever told to us in school. And we have to fight the information marginalization. And how can we really approach this in a type of people that are so steeped in denial and conspiracy theory concepts?
Well, as I've said earlier, get my DVDs, get my research. Number one thing, we need to elect Ron Paul. I'll tell you that for sure, if we can get him in.
Yes, we're all supporting him.
Yeah, and get my material and share it with your friends, share it with your neighbors.
What is the address to get the material?
Get it through my website, tedgunnarsson.com, or 1-free-dvd.com. But get my material. I'm giving it away for shipping
and handling. I understand that, but how do we... I tried to break the information backlog with a friend of mine by explaining to them, look, Hillary and Giuliani are both funded by the same sources, or at least organized by the same sources.
Well, spread the word. We've got to cut away here, Sean, but thank you very much for your call. Thank you very much.
Finishing up this second hour, I'm going to play whatever remaining time we have of the interview that I had with the author of D.C. Madam, and his co-author was Nick Bryant, who wrote another book about the Franklin cover-up, was a cover-up of pedophilia up in Omaha, Nebraska. But anyway, Nick Bryant also co-authored a book on that with someone else. But here we go now with D.C. Madam.
We've got a very sensational book, and it's a very important book. And I made special arrangement to not only bring in the main author, but also the co-author, because I believe both have a lot of experience and a lot of research and a lot of effort in this subject. The name of the book is Confessions of a D.C. Madam, The Politics of Sex, Lies, and Blackmail. And it's written by Henry W. Benson, and the co-author is Nick Bryan, who's done a lot of previous research over the years in this area. Welcome to our program, Henry Benson.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
And your background, let me also bring in Nick Bryan. Welcome to our program also.
Well, thanks for having me.
Okay, let's start with Henry Benson first. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into this, being called later the D.C. Madam and so forth, and then we'll switch over to Nick Bryan and have him tell us about his background, okay?
Sure. I ran the largest gay escort service that's ever been exposed in Washington, D.C., and my ultimate downfall was precipitated by the fact that I provided escorts to a CIA asset named Craig Spence, who used my escorts to blackmail politicians and other power brokers. And ultimately, I became the fall guy for a sprawling conspiracy whose cover-up was engineered at the pinnacle of the Bush 1 administration.
Right. In your book here, there was this the name of it, Confessions of a D.C. Madam. Was there not later on a madam, a woman by the name of Palfrey?
That's right. Both Deborah Jean Palfrey and I were both dubbed the D.C. Madam by the press.
Okay. And so now, now, Nick, come on in and make a few comments or color comments on this. Where did you come in on the writing of this book?
Well, I've known Henry for a number of years, and Henry has been pummeled by the government and also the media. And he decided, he called me one day and asked me if I wanted to collaborate about a book on his life. And I knew Henry's life very well because of other research and other things I had written, and I jumped on the opportunity to collaborate with Henry Vincent. And we ultimately forged Confessions of a D.C. Madam, The Politics of Sex, Lies, and Blackmail. And I think it's a very important story because it shows that American politicians are being blackmailed. And that's something that really doesn't come out in the media today. Americans think that their political system has become a wayward aberration of the ideals that it was originally founded upon. But they think it's like PAC money that has turned our political system into an aberration. But in many cases, it's actually blackmail. And Henry's book delineates that very, very well.
Yeah, Henry, you actually, when you started this, you were in the funeral service business up in the Washington, D.C. area. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. I have a degree in mortuary science, and I was working as a funeral director in Washington, D.C.
And then there was an opportunity for you to buy purchase an existing escort service. Is that the story?
That's right. I came from a small town in West Virginia, moved to D.C., and some friends and I from the mortuary were going out for an evening on the town. We went to an exotic dance bar. I met an escort, and I'd never even known an escort, never even knew what they were before. And we got to be friends, and over the next couple of weeks, I became very aware of what he was doing. He introduced me to his associate, and it just turned out the service was for sale. So I ended up buying it, and that's the way it happened.
Well, I think you expanded it through additional telephone lines, and you made it much more efficient than before. Is that correct?
That's right. I looked at the way they were operating, and I thought, wow, they're doing very well, but they run a very poorly operated business. So I looked at it, and I made some changes. And I started going through the Yellow Pages. I noticed a lot of the numbers were disconnected because this business seems to be kind of transient. And I would pay the back money to get those telephone numbers. So I ended up with a lot of telephone ads in the phone directory. And after a while, I became the largest service in Washington, D.C.
Right. In your work there, you know, Nick made an important point just a few minutes ago, was that the Craig Spence connection, and then Larry King, I think, was there at that meeting, but not the broadcaster, but I believe the black Larry King out of Omaha, Nebraska. But at one meeting there, was it not revealed that there were hidden cameras in the Craig Spence mansion that he conducted a lot of these escapades at?
That's right. Craig called for me to come over to his house. I went over. Had a beautiful house in upper northwest Washington. One thing that really catches your eye is this huge mirror when you walk in to his office, his library. And we sat there and talked, Larry King and I, along with Craig. Craig was asking me many things about my life and about this business and customers, things of that nature. After we talked for a while, Larry got up, walked over to what I thought was a closet, motioned for me to come over, and inside the closet is another door, and then I could see all this recording equipment. He played back what I had just said, then it became very apparent what was really going on. He would have these lavish parties in his house, always call for call boys to come over, had beautiful people there. And he was recording all of it. So his entire house was wired for blackmail.
Right. Matt, what year was this that this operation was underway?
From the mid-'80s until about 1990. So the mid-'80s.
I see. And the paltry lady, when she was suicided or committed suicide, about what date would that be involved in this overall?
Well, Miss Palfrey, she was the D.C. madam in 2008, so about 20 years after me.
Oh, that was much later.
That's
my
right.
My gosh. Now in this scheme, this blackmail scheme, there were some of the top people in our government, what, military and top political leaders? Is that what you're saying here?
That's right. And I'm very comfortable naming names now because I ran an escort service during the Reagan and Bush 1 administration. And under Reagan, no gay civil rights legislation was passed. Reagan once declared that homosexuals were sick. And there were many high-profile people. My best-known client was probably Donald Gregg, who was the U.S. ambassador to South Korea, and William Casey, was being the director of the CIA, would have been the best-known client. I'm sorry, William Casey.
Okay, and the proclivities that some of these people had was very, very abnormal and very weird. Is that correct?
Well, that's right. William Casey had this ritual. He liked to be rubbed down in oil, and that's right. There were some.
Yeah, we've got to be careful in our language here because we're going out to the public, and we have to be careful. There's all kinds of different age groups listing. Now, Nick Bryan, this Larry King connection, I believe that Henry was there at the mansion, Craig Spence's mansion, and Larry King was there, and also Craig Spence. But how does Larry King enter into the D.C. area? What was it from the Franklin scandal? Is that right? Yeah, Nick.
Hello.
Yeah, Nick. How does Larry King enter into this from Omaha, Nebraska, into the D.C. area? Or what?
I seem to have lost you for a little bit. Well, Larry King and Craig Spence had a business together. They were in the business of blackmailing people. And if you wanted an escort in his early 20s or a female escort in her early 20s, they'd provide you with that. Or if you wanted children, they'd also provide you with that. So anything that a power broker that attended Spence's parties desired, they would be provided with, men, women, or children. And Larry King, Craig Spence, they were in business together as blackmail artists.
Right. Henry, you said at one time when you were meeting there with Spence, Craig Spence, and Larry King, that they were requesting that you bring underage children in, but you refused to do that. Is that correct?
That's right. I refused to do that. That's one of the sinister things that I dealt with him, and I always refused to do that.
Right. Now getting back to the Franklin scandal, you wrote a book, Nick, entitled The Franklin Scandal. Was Larry King involved in this financial scandal in Omaha, Nebraska?
Yes. Henry's book touches on that, Confessions of a D.C. Madam. Henry's book gets into the really dirty side of D.C. politics, which Larry King was involved in, as I said earlier, with Craig Spence. So Confessions of a D.C. Madam really puts the reader into the most sordid side of D.C. politics. And that's why I think it's a great read. There's never been a book like it that puts a reader right into a blackmail operation that's going on in Washington, D.C.
Right. Now, Henry, you got entangled into, because it was connected to the CIA, some of these operations, then did you not experience some really legal problems in prison time? Is that right?
I'm sorry, we must have a bad connection. I couldn't really hear that.
Yeah, okay. Henry, since this involves some kind of a CIA connection, possibly through Craig Spence, did you experience some legal problems and some prison time?
Yes, I did. I was charged in a 43-count indictment and was facing 295 years in prison. And I did end up going to prison for 60 months.
Right. Now later on, did not your mother was quite an entrepreneur. Was there another second prison that was visited on you or what?
That's right. For conspiracy to impede the IRS in collection, Nick had actually contacted me about a year before that happened and said, you know, I think you're going to be going back again because everyone else did. I said, that's impossible. There's no way that can't happen. And, but it did happen.
Now, later on, you would strike out on a new career. Is that right?
That's right. I went back to school and got a master's degree in integrated marketing communications from West Virginia University. And I'm also a commercially rated pilot in airplanes and helicopters. So I've done quite a bit in my life.
I think Henry is a great example of how someone has really turned their life around. I mean, Henry is a poster boy for a reformed felon. And despite all the stuff that Henry's had to deal with, all the persecution by both the government and the media, he's become a very successful, legitimate businessman. And it's truly unfortunate that he has to endure media persecution up to this very day.
Right. You know, Trine Day are friends of mine that published this book. And Chris Milligan is one of the most stand-up guys you'll ever know and meet. And he comes out of a CIA family himself. His father was CIA when he was growing up. So Chris Milligan took on this book to help y'all really expose some of the problems. Now, does this go back centuries or millenniums, this boy, man, or this kind of pedophilia type of activity at the highest levels of power? What are some of your perspectives on that, Henry?
Well, I think it does. I think it started before I was around, and I think it's still going on today. I think blackmail plays a much more integral role in the American political process. But blackmailers and their blackmail targets would never divulge such misconduct for the obvious reasons. Blackmailers would be subjected to criminal prosecution, and their blackmail targets would be subjected to either prosecution or persecution for the conduct that led them to be blackmailed in the first place. So I think political blackmail is almost never made public, and if it is, it's years after the fact. Just look at J. Edgar Hoover, for example. Because he blackmailed people for decades, and his blackmailing only emerged years after his death. And I think Larry Craig is an example of a congressman who was possibly compromised. Craig was in D.C. for nearly 30 years as a U.S. representative and a senator. And given Craig's status as a conservative Republican, if word of his shadow life leaked out, it would have been political suicide and public disgrace. But his runaway libido compelled him to take just mind-boggling risks. And I find it impossible to believe that Craig's homosexual exploits were unnoticed by the blackmail ring that I provided with escorts, because I provided Craig with escorts, and the ring was well aware of my patrons. And I'm of the belief that the best explanation that can be offered concerning Craig's brazen exploits with regards to his homosexuality is the fact that he was compromised. And I think he was mindful that his brazen exploits would be covered up.
And I just want to chime in on political blackmail here. Political blackmail.
Yeah, jump in anytime, Nick.
Political blackmail has been used by kingdoms, empires, syndicates, and unscrupulous groups since time immemorial. Throughout World War II and the Cold War, intelligence agents carefully monitored their counterparts. Because the potential for blackmail was always there. And the CIA and the State Department never knowingly hired homosexuals due to their susceptibility to blackmail. So blackmail has really played an integral role in the American landscape. And one of the things that's come out, Henry was talking about J. Edgar Hoover, and one of the things that's come out is that J. Edgar Hoover purportedly blackmailed John F. Kennedy into accepting Lyndon Johnson as his running mate in 1960. That's according to Kennedy's secretary, Evelyn Lincoln. So, and Kennedy was murdered 3 years later, and Lyndon Johnson ascended to the presidency. And Kennedy originally planned on picking Missouri Senator Stuart Symington for his vice presidential running mate. So Hoover's blackmail of Kennedy radically altered the American political landscape in the 1960s. And I think that there are, I mean, this is one example that we know about, but I think that there are a myriad of examples of political blackmail completely altering the landscape of American politics.
Henry, do you think, that's very, very good comments there, Nick. Henry, do you think that it's moved from blackmail of being gay to pedophilia activity? You think it's been stepped up now to that level? Because it looks like in the pedophilia area, that's very, very sensitive area, and people get killed when they start investigating into this area. What are your comments and thoughts?
Well, Nick can answer that question better than I can, I think.
For me, I think that blackmail is used on anyone who has a weakness. If someone is married and they're heterosexual and they're having an affair on their wife, they can be blackmailed or leveraged. I think Elliot Spitzer is a very good example of that. If you look at the Elliot Spitzer case, it's very obvious that the federal government took Elliot Spitzer down. John Edwards is also another case of someone who was having an affair. And he was outed, and that just destroyed his ability to run for president. So I think that anybody that has any type of weakness, is, especially if it's sexual, is susceptible to blackmail. It just doesn't apply to pedophiles. It applies to homosexuals, and it applies to married men who cheat on their wives. So anyone can be potentially blackmailed if they've got some kind of extracurricular activity going on in their lives.
Right, Henry. As far as the demographics of your customer there on this escort service, was it Democrats and Republicans and everybody in between, or left and right, or how would you characterize some of the clients that you provided services to?
Well, I ran an escort service during the Bush 1 and Reagan administration, and a lot of my clients were closeted Republicans.
Okay, but that didn't, that, you know, but you're saying that this is across the board otherwise. I mean, that was your experience, basically.
That was my experience, because that's the period of time that I was in that business during Reagan and Bush 1 administration.
Now let me ask, I'm going to put a question to both of you here, and when you get into proclivities that are very weird, sexual, does it not come have characteristics more dominant than the actual sexual part of it or something? So is there a dominant aspect sometimes to these things that are way over and above just the sexual part? What would your comments be, Henry?
I think so. I think so. And I think the most disturbing and sinister thing that I was ever exposed to was the fact that politicians and power brokers were provided with children if they had those inclinations. And I was consistently pressured by D.C. power brokers to provide child prostitutes to their power broker cronies, but I refused to do so. And the government was aware of that fact, because I told my government debriefers about an interstate pedophile network that was providing D.C. politicians and power brokers with children. But the Department of Justice, Secret Service, and FBI covered up that pedophile network.
Right. How about your comments, Nick?
Well, it's interesting. Henry talks about Craig Spence, who was a very powerful individual. He took male prostitutes on midnight tours of the White House. He had major intelligence connections. He was welcomed by very upper echelon people in both the Reagan and Bush administrations. And he had a proclivity to be tied up and beaten. So, we talk about William Casey in Henry's book, and William Casey liked to be ritualistically anointed with oils. And he also had, like, erectile dysfunction problems. So that's how Henry became aware that he was his patron, because the escorts would talk about William Casey. And so, yes, a number of these very powerful people do have kind of abnormal sexual foibles and picadillos.
Right. Are both of you familiar with the documentary Boys for Sale? Did you ever run across that in your studies and research?
I have not, no.
Oh, okay. How about you?
No, Henry? I haven't.
Okay, well, we've included that as part of our site as far as notes go and everything. It came out of Houston a number of years ago, and Tom Philpott, a professor at the University of Texas, and Mark McKinnon, who was the editor of the Daily Texan at the time, reviewed it on a local. Now, there is another subject, too, the Belgium scandal. Are you familiar with anything like that back a few years ago in Belgium, where there was a pedophile network over there that became public to a degree? Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
No.
You're talking about the Dutroux scandal, and I'm familiar with the Dutroux scandal. And then the Seville scandal is happening right now in the United Kingdom. So, and both the Seville and Dutroux networks were linked to blackmail and upper echelon people in both the Belgian and UK establishment and politics. So what we've talked about in Henry's book isn't, I don't think, an aberration. It's politics as usual.
Right. The it's come to attention that there have been some statements by some very important people. And I think some of the statements are saying things like, well, sex with children is okay or something. And there have been several statements by different people representing different foundations and so forth. Have you been have you noticed that some of the public opinion is coming up like this just lately? It's just been publicized recently. What are your comments?
Well, I haven't noticed that, but the thing about Henry's book is it's his perspective running escort service in Washington, D.C., and he didn't provide children, and he actually stayed as far away from that as possible. And the import of Henry's book is that he witnessed the blackmailing, or he knew about the blackmailing of power brokers, and he knew about Craig Spence's nefarious activities. And I think that that's a really important topic to stay on as far as when we're talking about Henry's book. Because after all, it's called, the subtitle is The Politics of Sex, Lies, and Blackmail. So I think that's where the import of Henry's book is it elucidates
right.
The blackmailing of politicians.
What would you add to that, Henry? What could you add to that?
Well, I think blackmail is much more common than one would believe. And, of course, D.C. is, they have a greater dexterity to cover up scandals and crimes that lend themselves to blackmail in D.C. due to the fact the Capitol's law enforcement is exclusively controlled by various branches of the federal government. The U.S. Attorney for D.C., who prosecutes all D.C. crimes, is appointed by the President. The FBI and Secret Service are minions of the executive branch, and Congress controls the budget of D.C.'s Metropolitan Police Department. So I think the federal government has a much greater ability to cover up scandals and crimes in D.C. than any other place.
Right.
Henry, get into your experience about blackmail and the integral role that it plays in the American political process.
Well, and as I said earlier, in my experience, blackmail plays an integral role in the American political process. But blackmailers and their blackmail targets would never divulge such misconduct for the obvious reasons. Blackmailers are subjected to criminal prosecution, and the blackmail targets would be subjected to either prosecution or persecution for that conduct. And it doesn't come out till years later. And present-day blackmail, recent whistleblowers have also discussed the blackmail of American politicians. Sybil Edmonds, a former FBI translator, has disclosed that the FBI routinely collected information that enables it to blackmail American politicians. And NSA whistleblowers Russell Tice and Bill Binney, they've also disclosed that the NSA has collected information on American politicians that could make them susceptible to blackmail. So I think there's blackmail is much more prevalent than we believe if we look around at what they're doing today with Sybil Edmonds.
And I think that the media has reported on some of the things that Edmonds, Tice, and Binney have said. And actually, Tice was one of the sources for the New York Times articles in 2005 that reported on the NSA's illegal data mining of Americans. However, the mainstream media has refused to report on their allegations regarding the potential blackmailing of American politicians. So it's kind of telling that these mainstream media outlets will take, will cherry pick information from Sybil Edmonds or Russell Tice or Bill Binney, but yet they refuse to talk about the blackmail that they brought up, or the potential blackmailing of American politicians. It shows how skewed the media is with regards to the subject.
Is it the attitude, sort of a social and moral relativist attitude, that you just sort of stay away from these sexual topics, or what? What would your thoughts be there?
Well, I think that a lot of people in the media are potentially blackmailed. With my research, and Spence's activities, I think, really emphasize this, that people in the media are as susceptible to blackmail as politicians. Because if you've got a wayward political system, you also need a wayward media, because the media is ultimately the watchdog of the political system. So the media has to be compromised as well as the political process. And I think it's very telling that five corporations own approximately 90% of the media that Americans imbibe. So you've got these five titanic corporations that provide the vast majority of the media to Americans. And another thing is, these titanic corporations don't want to upset the government, because the government could break them up at any time with antitrust lawsuits. So at this point, we have a synergy between the media and the government. And it's a synergy that ultimately undermines American democracy.
Do you think that this synergy will ever be reformed to any degree? What do you think, Henry?
Well, I think the blackmail that an enterprise that's ensnared numerous D.C. power brokers ran by CIA, and I think the Washington Post, look at Operation Mockingbird. That's been going on since 1948. There's the book, Catherine the Great. Journalist Deborah Davis showed that Ben Bradley was producing CIA propaganda as far back as the 1950s. And so I think that it's much more prevalent than we believe.
That's all we can play for that, D.C. madam. But we want to thank each and every one of you out there in our listening audience. And God bless each and every one of you. But we've got to dig down here and get this information out to as many people as you can. And the children are at stake in this. Our children are the most precious little creatures in the whole wide world. And we love them so, but we've got to protect them and keep them away from this human trafficking gang that has been evolved. But God bless each and every one of you. Let's keep rolling out there and fighting this evil. Thank you.